All right. I know usually in hip hop you do the shout outs at the end, but I wanted to do shout outs here. We have folks that drove all the way out from San Francisco. So everybody give a round of applause for Habit for coming out. I think also important that we also give a round of applause for the work that Quiet has put in to this community, has shown on the ground how tangibly we can fight a queer struggle in solidarity with people in Palestine. So, and another shout out to all those folks in and around, involved with No One Is Illegal, fighting the good fight, no borders, no matter what. Okay, so I've written my speech because if I don't, I don't know how to stop without a period. So bear with me, I hope it's all right. I want to begin first by asserting that we're meeting today on occupied and stolen land. This isn't a formality. The land here is understood to be contested by Three Fires and Six Nations territories. Toronto, as this land is now called, existed prior to colonization with fluid and contested boundaries and borders. This is something I don't think we can overlook tonight. The indigenous people here of Turtle Island who are of this land have been resisting war, occupation, assimilation, and the imposition of colonial borders on their bodies and territories for 5 centuries. It's critical that to reinforce that the borders we are talking about today, the gender binaries, the checkpoints, the illegal occupations, the immigration thugs, the land crossings, are all imposed. They are imposed by an illegitimate occupying colonial entity. They are illegitimate. And thus, they are open to attack. And that's the good news. To resistance, to the resurgence of ways of living that refuse to acknowledge them, that make them obsolete, and that assert that fluidity of human interactions with other humans, animals, and the land can exist. So I'm an organizer with No One Is Illegal Toronto. I'm a bit of the old guard now, I guess, older member. But No One Is Illegal is a migrant justice organization that's tried to stop deportations and gain access to services for undocumented people and migrant workers in the city since back in 2003. Knowing that the forces of capitalism, war, colonialism, along with those of poverty, environmental degradation, patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia, and ableism displace people and often force them to move, we organize with others who challenge those forces. Our struggle is for a world where people are not forced off of their land and for a world where people are free to move if they so choose, with respecting the sovereignty and autonomy of the indigenous people wherever they are. So how does this queer work? You know, I think Gabby was saying, well, you know, queer theory is merged as a contestation of like the normative categories of gender and sexuality. In practice, queer radicals have contested not just gender and sexual categories, but all rigid borders, binaries, and identities imposed by dominant groups. As we meet actually in the midst of the longest running occupations of Wall Street in recent history, I'm reminded that back in 1989, ACT UP occupied the New York Stock Exchange where people fought for access to experimental AIDS drugs. I'm reminded of 2000 when there was resistance against Toronto police by queer and trans people at the Pussy Palace where they organized and reimagined what safe spaces for women and trans folk could look like. I'm reminded of all the queer and trans activists, many of whom are in this room, who formed vital parts of the Stolen Sisters campaign, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, the resistance to the G20, the Toronto Stop the Cuts movement, and No One Is Illegal Toronto, just to name a few of the various groups organizing the city. These are political spaces where queer and trans ways of being and relating to one another contest dominant forms of activism within our own groups. Part of the reason I think I was asked to speak tonight was because of my involvement with the Let Alvaro Stay campaign. maybe even before we start, maybe just a cheer and a hooray because we won that campaign. We won that campaign, which is awesome. Not everyone probably knows a lot about Alvaro, but it's really humbling thing for me right now to speak about this because I think I'm one of the many people, including Alvaro himself, who did what I think most people would do for a friend, a lover, you know, a family member facing this type of injustice. We fought back the best way we knew how. I think what was different for our fight is that the understandings we've gained in the fights that we've taken on throughout the last decade that I've been organizing in the city means that queer, anti-authoritarian, anti-colonial, anti-racist, feminist, anarchist, however you want to think of it, but these type of ideas permeate our understandings of the state, understandings that the state has no right or authority to impose its racist senses of status, identity, and queerness on us. For those who are unaware, Alvaro's story is one of resilience, of movement, of fluidity, and building family and home. Alvaro left Nicaragua, it was around the age of 12. He walked and traveled across Central America, Mexico, and finally the occupied territories of the United States and Canada. Through adversity, violence, imprisonment, homophobia, in order just to find a place where he could build family, create art, call home. He found this place here in Toronto and had contributed to this community in a number of incredible ways until a member of the Immigration Refugee Board determined that he didn't look gay enough to win his refugee case. This is the rule rather than the exception of the IRB. And that's important for us to remember. Alvaro is not the exception, he's the rule. The exception is that Alvaro spoke up. The exception is that Alvaro built and mobilized within the community. Alvaro was forced to spend 3 years underground with no status, fearing the potential for apprehension at any moment. And that's exactly what happened. Earlier this year, as Alvaro was attempting to take the subway, he was randomly stopped by Toronto police, asked to produce identity documents. Beyond the fact that this is completely illegal, according to even Canada's racist and xenophobic laws, Alvaro was detained and set for deportation. It was at that point that members of Toronto's queer community, including Alvaro's friends, supporters, and even folks who had never even met him, mobilized on the streets. We organized press conferences, flash mobs, detention center visits, petitions, and even a wave of support, all demanding Alvaro's release and return to the community. We refused to allow the Canadian state to determine what is and what is not family. We refused to allow them to narrowly define community. We determined that if the Canadian government was demanding proof of Alvaro's establishment in the community, that we would bring the community to the establishment. And that's what we did. We went to the IRB offices on Victoria Street. We shut down Church and Wellesley with a flash mob. Some of our tactics, actually interestingly, were even inspired and adapted from watching video clips of our comrades here from San Francisco. And that's a really important thing that we're all sitting here today. Because probably if we hadn't all seen some of those clips, it wouldn't have come to mind with some of our organizers that, well, what would Alvaro want us to do from detention? He'd want us to be creative, artistic, and he wanted to make a show that we could actually shut something down, and we did. So it was that resilience and the incorporation of queer politics on the street that eventually won Alvaro's release from detention and his being granted permanent resident status. But this struggle is not just about the fight to stop deportations of our family, friends, and lovers. This struggle is about rethinking community, about imagining the type of world that we want to live in, and rather than waiting for someone or some government to give it to us, doing it. This is a queer politics. A queer politics, in my belief, is one that doesn't challenge labels imposed by the state, but does away with those labels altogether. The queer politics doesn't just negotiate with the state to stop deportations, but rejects borders and the legitimacy of the state to determine who comes in and who can't altogether. A queer politics does not just fight the violence of patriarchy, sexism, misogyny, homophobia, and transphobia, but rethinks ways to build safe, fluid, and open relationships where we can find mechanisms within our own communities that address conflict, harm, and power imbalances in liberatory and empowering ways. I think it's essential that we focus our energies on making material changes. We can't simply criticize the oppressive and violent nature of the Canadian US government and those of the elite against Indigenous, migrant, queer communities. We have to stop them. We need to be willing to put our freedoms in danger to ensure that they stop. We need to be willing to start building the types of communities that we want to live in now, in reality, as imperfect as they are, rather than wait for the slow decay of a better tomorrow. Queer bodies have been sexualized, criminalized for hundreds of years under the Western legal system. Our sexual practices, cultural practices, have been criminalized. But it took thousands of acts of daily resistance and hundreds more of collective power that resulted in the first legal decriminalization and then secondly, a massive cultural shift to allow some more freedom for queer communities, at least here in the West and even more narrowly in Toronto. This is similar to the struggle waged by undocumented people everywhere, every day, criminalized for cultural practices, for transgressing borders, for acts of resistance. And a similar mass cultural shift is required now to ensure that undocumented people, migrants, are also decriminalized. Our primary organizing project, as part of Known as Legal in this city, is what we've been calling a solidarity city. We believe that while we struggle for mass decriminalizations of migrants, we also need to ensure that material conditions of our communities aren't ignored. This means fighting for access to basic things like schools, shelters, housing, food, dignity, justice. We do this by going directly into the schools, into the health centers, into the food banks, and working directly with service providers and people who come into these services to change these internal policies and cultures, to ensure that people without immigration papers have some status in these places. One of our major inspirations for this type of work are those of the people in this room again who organized and fought for a Toronto Hassle Free Clinic in the early 90s, who despite immense police and legislative pressure refused to follow the law and continued to provide anonymous HIV testing. So let's hear a shout out for them as well. So this is our history, right? This isn't just a bunch of random events that took place. We are building history. They've showed us that when enough people break unjust laws, the laws change. And we believe that enough service providers, enough communities throw open their doors to all people, undocumented and not, when we, as communities, refuse to allow immigration thugs into our communities, then that's when the laws that criminalize people from moving will change. But we also have to consistently remember that in this struggle, we will face many contradictions. For instance, how do we maintain our collective responsibility to Indigenous sovereignty and autonomy while at the same time fighting for the freedom of movement? It's not an easy question. It's something that Known as Illegal, we've had to grapple with all those contradictions in practice. And they're unsettled and imperfect. How do we ensure that the broader non-Indigenous community begins to respect this relationship as well? How do we organize within a queer context without imposing Western or essentialist ideas on what constitutes queer in other places and for other communities? How do we deal with xenophobia, homophobia, transphobia, and racism and sexual violence within our own activist communities? These are serious questions, and I think we're all here tonight because we all can, I think we all need to contribute to that answer. And I think we all need to build those discussions, not just in these type of forums, but back in our collectives, in our groups, in our households, wherever we live, love, and work. So these are the questions I've been reflecting on a lot since we won our struggle to let Alvaro stay. And I think these are the types of questions that forums like this provide a space to begin. I've always believed that queer politics is inherently action-oriented, that it provides potential pathways to action that are decentralized, non-hierarchical, and fluid. Something I believe is essential if we are to tear down capitalism, the state, and the borders that impose them. Thank you.